Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and in Copley Square today, a scene that MBTA passengers better get used to. WBUR's Bruce Gellerman caught up with writers who are
very frustrated.
Nancy Bunsen was waiting and waiting for a bus to South Station.
It takes too long. It's moving very slow. So we've waited over 40 minutes for the bus a couple times throughout this weather. So very frustrated and very cold.
While roads are snow jammed, above ground tracks are still locked in ice, forcing MBTA General Manager Beverly Scott to admit yesterday that it could take a full month to restore the T to complete service. That is, if no more big storms add to the misery.
So in Kenmore Square today, rider Lubens Bruno said his patience is wearing thin.
For the fact that the fare hike's been going up, you know, all that money we're putting into pay for the subway to run smoothly, we don't see that happening.
Well, yesterday, we talked about why that isn't happening. And we focused on the MBTA's profound financial woes. And after the program, we received an email from a listener that began, quote, "Today's show was frustrating in the extreme for me, a daily MBTA writer."
John Pizarro suggested that we take a look at how the T is managed. He wrote, "As a writer, it is the small things that are so glaring. They typify a management that is entirely out of touch with reality."
John pointed to how the Green Line is often overflowing after rush hour because the T reduces service even though demand remains high. He also pointed to how train arrival time signs on the Red Line are 20th, not 21st century technology, and how when the MBTA shut down to the biggest recent storms, the entire system was shut down, even the underground portions, which he thinks wasn't necessary.
"The T does not need more money," John writes. "It needs a wholesale replacement of the entire management."
Well, John, you're probably not the only writer who thinks that right now. So we're going to take a closer look. And joining us to do so is John Sturman. He's a professor of management and the director of the Systems Dynamics Group at the MIT Sloan School of Management. John Sturman, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, let me just ask you the question that our listener, John, seems to be pointing straight at. Would different management, a different style of management, different decisions have avoided the catastrophe that the MBTA is facing right now?
Well, as a T rider myself, I commute by bicycle and by T every day. I share in the frustration that that your listeners are reporting. And there's no doubt that there's room for improvement in management, but the plain fact of the matter is no manager is going to be able to turn the system around without a very substantial infusion of new resources. There's simply too large of a backlog of deferred maintenance, and the result is that the system as a whole has been sliding into unreliability and lower performance for decades, not just for the last few years, finally hit with these historic storms, the system crumpled.
Well, you know,
so this shouldn't be a surprise to anybody.
Yeah, and I don't think it necessarily is a surprise, but yesterday we talked about sort of exactly what you pointed to just now, that in order to fix where we are now, we need a huge infusion of cash. But our listener, John, you know, pointed to the fact that, or he questioned that maybe the challenge that the T faces right now wouldn't have been so large if different management decisions were made beforehand, even with the budgets that the T had beforehand. So, I mean, it's not uncommon for complicated systems, whether they're public or private, to slide into deferred maintenance. Why is it that managers and leaders tend to let that happen to the organizations that they work for, especially when it comes to something like public transit?
So that is a great question, and it does happen in all kinds of organizations. We've seen it in private, for-profit firms. We've seen it in nonprofits. We've seen it in government agencies, not just the T. We see it in healthcare. And so the question is, what is going on that causes good people to make decisions that result in this gradual slide? And it happens inadvertently, and it happens subtly at the beginning. You know, you get in a little cash crunch, everybody's got to take a little out of their operating budgets, and the maintenance people, they have to cut too. So what gets cut? Well, proactive maintenance, preventive maintenance, system upgrades, process improvement. Because when equipment breaks, you have to fix it. The result of that in the short run is nothing. The system keeps running. But over the longer term, you're building up that backlog of deferred maintenance. You're building up capital stock that's old and out of date and prone to failures. And you're putting the safety of your riders and your employees at risk. Mm. And eventually, more things will break down. Now, put yourselves in the shoes of a manager, well-intentioned, trying to do the right thing, or a worker, trying to work really hard. When things break and you get a safety hazard, you've got to address that. And it's very costly. Costs more to be putting in all those buses to get people around when the red line can't run all the way out to Braintree and Ashmont.
Right.
And that money comes out of process improvement. Think about a manager in the wake of these storms or even in last year's weather. We have to deal with this right now today, and it would be irresponsible not to. How much process improvement is happening? How much long-term planning for improvement is happening?
None.
None. And anybody in that position put in that system, you would have to make the same decision.
Well,
so the real question is, how do we get out of this trap that we've gotten into, and how do we do it in a way that doesn't blame individuals and instead focus on the underlying systemic forces?
Okay, so two important points, and I want to come back to both of them, but I do also want to just ask you a quick question about something else that you've written about regarding how it's not uncommon at all for preventative maintenance to go by the wayside. I mean, it's something that we hear about all the time, whether it's taking care of our own houses to taking care of, you know, the U.S. electric grid. But you've written
right.
that managers who try to do the right thing by boosting preventative maintenance are often, you know, penalized either directly or indirectly for that.
Sure. Well, so let's say you were running the T and you understood this dynamic and you did the right thing. So that means you're going to dramatically increase expenditure and you're going to have to take the few remaining trains and equipment that you've got running out of service so they can be repaired, improved, and put back in. So the very first thing that's going to happen to you is your costs are going to go up and your system uptime is going to go down. And in a lot of situations, the very next thing that happens is you're going to get fired and the program will be abandoned. And that, in this way, it becomes a self-reinforcing trap, a kind of a vicious cycle that keeps a system stuck. So now the real question is, how do you get out of that? And a number of organizations of all types, private, public, nonprofit, have gotten out of it.
Do you have a good example?
Sure. So we've worked with some energy companies for many years, and they have had many of the same issues. And there's, you know, a long list of accidents and disasters in this industry, from the Deepwater Horizon to the Upper Big Branch coal mine disaster, where people lose their lives when maintenance and reliability and safety are compromised. It's not just that the trains won't run and you have to wait in the cold, which is bad enough. So we have worked with these organizations. They have invested enough to escape the trap and stuck to their guns and stayed the course over long enough time that things start to get better. So in the short run, things have to get worse, but then the improvement starts to accumulate.
Well, let me just jump in.
Cheaper system.
Yeah, I apologize for interrupting, but I just do want to jump in here because I keep hearing the voice of John, our listener, in my head, because he's probably saying, "Okay, I take your point. Things might have to get worse before they get better." But I mean, if a series of small decisions lead to big disasters like we're seeing now, or big problems like we're seeing now, how do you instill a culture in an organization, especially in a public organization, where, you know, people are appointed and they may not stay in the job for more than a couple of years? How do you change the culture there such that preventative maintenance or customer service or all those things are at the forefront, and so we get out of the maintenance trap?
Absolutely. So, of course, this isn't just an issue for government organizations where people only last as long as the administration. We see it in the private sector too. And I think this is where leadership really needs to come in. You need leaders to articulate the long-term vision, focusing on safety, reliability as the top priority, and insisting that that guides all the decisions. So to be very concrete, I think the governor has a historic opportunity right now to put into place the policies that will really fix this problem. It's going to require more revenue. Nobody wants to pay more in fares. Nobody wants to pay more in taxes. But the plain fact of the matter is we are paying it now. You just don't pay for it in the gas tax when you fill your tank, and you don't pay for it when you swipe your Charlie card. But you pay for it now. All those people you just interviewed in Kenmore Square who are cold and late for their jobs and wasting all those tens of thousands of hours, that's real cost to businesses, to our economy, to the welfare of our citizens. And what we ought to be doing and what the governor ought to be articulating is we have a historic opportunity because gasoline prices are now very low. Raise the gas tax, put the revenue towards fixing our infrastructure, the T and the roads, and recognize that you have to invest enough to bring that backlog of deferred maintenance down. Just investing a little bit, it's like bailing a little water out of a sinking ship. Unless you bail faster than the water is leaking in, you're still going to sink.
Right.
So let me make the substantial commitment, and it's actually going to save money when you look at it from a whole system point of view.
Let me ask you a final question that sort of works off the metaphor you just presented to us. Are riders right to expect better from management, to expect a captain of the ship who may, you know, be able to sail to the closest port to safety rather than if the ship is taking on a lot of water, sailing it into the middle of even larger body of water? Basically, yeah. You know, better steering at the helm of the MBTA.
Sure. And there's no doubt that management changes are going to be needed. I'm not enough of an expert on what goes on day-to-day inside the T to be able to say exactly what those are, but there's no doubt that there's room for improvement there. But I think the main point for your listeners is whatever the improvement opportunities there are, it's not going to make any difference as long as that backlog of deferred maintenance is not addressed. We're going to have to put the resources in so that we can bail faster than the water's leaking in, so we can plug the leaks faster than new ones are arising, and so we can train our people faster than their skills and morale are eroding. If we don't do that, the boat is going to sink.
John Sturman is a professor of management and the director of the System Dynamics Group at the MIT Sloan School of Management. Professor Sturman, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome. Thanks.
Stay with us. Still ahead, they're legal and popular in Philadelphia and Chicago, so why not Boston? The debate over allowing BYOB restaurants in the city. I'm Anthony Brooks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.